Good morning, everyone, and I would like to welcome each and every one of you to the session this morning. This is a very important conference. The title of it is The Education We Need for the Future We Want. And it's really, really important that we have you in this room who have sacrificed your Saturday morning to come and discuss the importance of public education. It's not easy to get up on Saturday mornings, and so we turned the temperature down a little bit in this room so you could remain awake. What's amazing about this conference is to see parents, students, and we really welcome the students from the colleges and the high school, teachers, citizens, people from the College Institute, BC Fed of Labor. We have representatives here from the superintendents. And to see the variety of people in this province who absolutely care about the kind of society we live in. Public education is the foundation of a just society. And I believe, along with you, that British Columbians are committed to supporting and living in a socially just society. And I want to thank the sponsors once again this morning for allowing this kind of an event to take place. And in case any of you were wondering, I'm not Cindy Oliver. Cindy Oliver moderated last night. And my name is Ginny Sims, and I'm the first vice president of the BC Teachers Federation. And it is, you know, we're always trying new things, new ways to have our discussions. And last night was a very moving moment because there were two things I took away from the presentations last night. There were many, but there were two key ones. One is that we're not alone. As we go through difficult times, especially the kind of change that has come at us in education and in other parts of our lives in British Columbia, it's very easy to believe that you're the only one, you're alone, and to kind of cocoon. And the second message I took out from yesterday is we have to voice our concerns and our passions. And what this conference is about building bridges, continuing to build bridges and continuing to unite our voice so we can move towards a socially just society and a passion for public education, because that's what this is all about. And we have an interactive panel for you today, and you will notice there's a motley crew sitting in front of you, and they will introduce themselves in a few moments. It's not going to be a panel in the traditional sense, where you're going to have each speaker just sitting there and giving you 5 minutes of their speech and then it's over. It's an interactive panel, okay? More like one of those interviews that you watch on TV. Okay, so we've got the stars, they've had their makeup done, and they're ready. And you as the audience are going to have a chance to participate. So there is going to come a time when it will be opened up for interaction so that we can all participate. And at that time, we ask you to go to the mics on the floor. There are two mics set up, and we will take discussion at that stage. So without further ado, I'm going to hand the mic over to Paul Shaker. Paul Shaker is the Dean of Education at SFU. He's new to the province of British Columbia, and but he's a quick learner, and he has a long history in education and a passion for public education. So Paul, over to you.
Thank you, Jenny. Well, I got to be the moderator because I'm the person in the room who knows the least about BC education. And most of what I know about education are things to avoid now since I've just come up from George Bush's America in the last few months. And the way inclusion is used in the United States is not necessarily germane to what you're going to hear today. So we're going to go around the panelist group and have each of them tell you who they are and the perspective that they're coming to this discussion on inclusion from. Deirdre?
I'm Deirdre Kelly. I'm a professor of educational studies at UBC. And For me, inclusion means just that, including everybody in school, regardless of race, culture, language ability, class, and so on. For the last few years, I've been working in teacher education and at the graduate level on this idea of teaching for social justice. What does that mean? And have had the privilege of working with some veteran high school social studies and English teachers. And one of the things that I found was that they had great ideas in terms of curriculum and pedagogy, but there wasn't much that they were saying around the idea of assessment. And yet, I think we could all agree that assessment drives a lot of what happens in terms of teaching and learning. And it certainly says a lot about what we value as a society and what public schooling should be about. So I hope to come back to that theme today in terms of the connections between inclusion and assessment.
Very good, thank you. Ken?
Well, my name is Ken Heacock. I feel a little bit after the introduction that I'm actually on Jerry Springer. One of these people might be my aunt and also my uncle. I guess I'll have to watch next week to see whether we're actually there. We were warned that this was being taped for posterity, so you don't know what's going to happen. I was a teacher librarian, a secondary school department head, a school principal, and I was a member of the senior management team of the Vancouver School Board before I felt I was in a values conflict with somebody who had been hired as superintendent. So I went to UBC as a professor in 1992. And I missed public education so much, I ran for my local school board, where the president of the teachers' union was Kip Krieger. So actually, it was probably one of the few school boards where the president of the teachers' union and the school board chair actually did some things together around the province, which is kind of interesting. And then became a municipal counselor. The peculiar thing, the reason I say all that is the peculiar thing that I found in those recent experiences is that many people felt I had no right to have an opinion on public education because it wasn't a parent. And I think this is a serious issue for us, that parents, you know, represent about, 30% of the population of this province, and we're missing a huge opportunity to ensure that our message about inclusiveness and the importance of a quality education, public education for our society is the critical message that's being missed in those particular venues. At UBC, just by regard to this province, you've heard about the McLean study, and UBC gets enormous points because we have such a high cutoff for students coming into the institution, and people are very proud of that in BC. All that means is that in British Columbia, the government would have to build another university the size of UBC to meet the national average participation in university education for kids of that age group, the national average. So I would say that's something to be ashamed of, actually, not something to be proud of. So I'm taking a broader view of inclusion and opportunity, and I was asked to focus specifically on school libraries and some of the other political things that are happening. I'm concerned that we're being pushed with an agenda to have schools that specialize. And in my experience, which is somewhat dated, I grant you, it was 10 years ago that I was in the public school system, it becomes an excuse, really, for administrators not to include those programs in their own school. So you establish schools for the arts, schools for music, schools for this and schools for that. And, you know, if you can't afford the resources locally, we can always send the kid off to another school. So we used to call them magnet schools, now they're schools of choice. So I think that's a concern that we should have. And I'm not putting this in black and white terms because the world is gray, but I think it's a caution that I have around those kinds of things. I think that schools should have the resources and services, obviously, that are required to provide opportunities for all kids to learn. And I think we need to recognize that equal and equitable are not the same. And to provide equal education requires, or an equitable education requires an unequal allocation of resources for some kids and programs and services, and that's sometimes forgotten. I'm passionately concerned about our national culture and identity. I feel it's being lost. The resources that we use are increasingly from other countries, particularly from south of the border. I think kids should see themselves in the books they read, in the technological resources they access, not growing up in New York City and Los Angeles, but in Vancouver. I think that's critical. We know that's important for self-esteem and also for achievement. I'm concerned that kids have the opportunity to read and learn. We don't talk about reading anymore, we talk about literacy, and then of course everyone wants to get on a political bandwagon, so we've got 100 different types of literacies now to make sure that everyone can connect to the potential money that might be available. But we know that studies of achievement tell us that reading, in fact, does predict achievement in those other areas. And we know that the mythology is that teens don't like to read, but we know that they will read if the materials are new, relevant, and there's someone who can connect them with something they'd be interested in. So I'm very concerned about the things I believe in terms of quality public education, literacy, culture, and for me, the vehicle that has served that best, as well as a collaborative work environment, has been a highly effective teacher librarian. So that's where I am coming from, and the incredible erosion in this province over the last 5 years.
Thank you. Chris?
Thank you, Paul. My name is Chris Stewart, and I'm NISCA. I'm also a teacher. I teach I taught in high school for about 5 years, and then moved into a secondary or into an elementary program for about 2 years. I've since just taken a leave to teach pre-service teachers, in particular looking at working with Indigenous knowledge and Indigenous teacher education. And I guess, you know, when I think about inclusion, you know, for myself, I think it's really important to have Indigenous knowledge be represented within the curriculum, and that Indigenous children need to see themselves reflected, not just in the hiring of teachers, administrators, counselors, superintendents, but also need to see themselves in literature, in text, in all areas of the curriculum, not just reading. I think that's all I'm going to say for now. Thank you.
Okay. Michael?
My name is Michael Gardner. I'm currently the BC organizer of the Canadian Federation of Students. But I'm bringing a perspective that goes back to my time working in the youth office of the Government of British Columbia in the mid-1990s, following the Transition Review Study, which looked at what impacted high school students and the choices they made in terms of accessing post-secondary education. And what I'll be talking about is economic barriers to inclusion and how those barriers at the post-secondary level affect student achievement, performance, and motivation all the way back to grade 8 and sometimes even earlier.
My name's Michelle Stack. My name's Michelle Stack. I'm an assistant professor at UBC. I'll be talking a bit about special needs today. I'm particularly interested in the media and how the media affects the way we look at children, especially children that have disabilities, how children are often made to look like a burden, and how that can actually affect the policy-making process. It becomes easier for government to cut back on children when they're not seen as represented as a priority in the media. So that's one of my interests.
Okay. Maybe we can go back to the topic of assessment to begin the discussion. From what you've seen, Deirdre, do you think that the assessment measures that are used in the special needs area are appropriate for categorizing and bringing services to special needs children?
Well, I haven't looked at that specifically. My focus has been on classroom assessment and how do we make that more equitable, and the effect of the Liberal government bringing in more provincial exams at the grade 10 level. I'm quite concerned about that. But maybe Michelle knows about the...
I think what you've talked about, Deirdre, in terms of assessment is the need for it to be relevant for students, and that we're so focused on efficiency and effectiveness, and that can be something that can be, or efficiency, really harmful for special needs students when it's not focused on their learning.
Make a
comment about this, and it's not my idea, I acknowledge it came up at breakfast and I can't remember who said it, but the thing that concerns me most is that the rules don't change, so that if we have criteria for assessment of special needs kids and the unfortunate resulting categorization, that we understand those rules. The rules were changed under this government, so miraculously we don't have as many special needs kids in the province anymore. And it seems to me that we really have to be clear about that. I'd like to give an anecdote myself, because this is the area I'm supposed to talk about. There's more than 30 years solid research that connects qualified teacher librarians with student achievement, literacy, and culture. So I pulled out the things that are related to standardized test results only. I met with a senior member of the government about this connection. And the response I got was, well, this is all that narrow American stuff that nobody wants to pay any attention to. I said, but these are the criteria that you use. These are the criteria you report to the press. These are the criteria you include in the FSA results. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about something else I can bring back to the table as well, but let's get the rules of the game clear, so we all know, A, what game we're playing and what the rules of engagement are. And I think that the challenge I have is that the goalposts keep changing.
Are there forms of assessment that can be equitable and inclusive, or are we inevitably, because of economic reasons, forced to use forms of assessment that are discriminatory in an invidious way?
Well, I think we are between a rock and a hard place, because we know that schools are used to sort and rank kids, and you know, the how well young people do in schools determines their fate to a large degree. I think I would like to see us get away from standardized testing, not go down the road that the U.S. has gone down. We've gone a little way down that road, and we could talk about the FSAs and the provincial exams, which I think take teachers away from their curricular focus. And it also conveys this message about what knowledge is like, right? Whatever we can turn into little bits that some authority tells us is either right or wrong starts to pervade the wider society. And it's pretty soon it comes to be what young people expect. You know, just give me the answers. Or I know parents sometimes put pressure on teachers to teach that way. Teachers themselves feel pressure to teach to the test. And I think that detracts us from equity a lot of times. I don't know if they still do it, but the Ministry of Education used to survey graduates, high school graduates, when you're out. And something like 50% of the students said that they felt that racism in school was a problem. And yet, we don't put knowledge on provincial exams that would get at anti-racism. And yet, obviously, that's a key goal. So I guess one of the things that I wanted to say about inclusion and assessment is that it can get us away from the goal of preparing active democratic citizens, and how you would assess that, I don't know that you could put it on a multiple choice exam. So I think we can assess that, but it's more appropriately done at the classroom and school level where teachers have many opportunities to act with young people and serve as role models and begin by involving students in assessment. I think good teachers do have students thinking about what criteria they will use to judge their work, and they can involve students in other aspects of assessment. And I think that sends a message that, you know, in not too many years from now, you will be adults and citizens, and, you know, we hope that you're active and participating. So our assessment, you know, how we think about assessment, I think, again, says a lot about what we want young people to turn into.
Chris, do you think these assessment issues have a particular importance for the Indigenous community?
Yeah, I was just thinking about how you know, I'm not a great believer or supporter of assessment testing or huge provincial testings that have been taking place over the years. But one significant outcome of them for Indigenous students in this province was that it was a huge wake-up call for teachers, people who work in communities with Indigenous students, or just teachers concerned about inclusion. And I think that there were huge gaps between Indigenous students and non-Indigenous students, and which lead back further to the fact that, you know, public education does not mirror, there is not a reflection of Indigenous students and, you know, the impacts of colonization that has taken place. Residential schools, you know, Indian day schools, the Indian Act, all of those things have played a huge role in, you know, why our kids are where they are today. And some people have been able to come out of cycles of and heal from a number of, you know, for example, residential school experience. But I think that the foundation skills assessment test really highlighted for us today a direction that we need to move. And I really think it takes away from the relationship that is desperately needed to be cultivated by public schools, not just with Indigenous students, but with all students. But because I'm here to address Indigenous education and students, that's a huge one right there.
Is there a connection between this and media?
Oh, I think so. I don't know if you've seen the movie The Corporation, but the head of the Fraser Institute in that documentary straight out said, we're about the marketization of schools. So when you have the director of the Fraser Institute saying that, I don't think you can look at Fraser Institute test results and think that they're a legitimate way to judge the public education system. They want to see the destruction of the public education system. And the media, I mean, I think reports those as if there's some sort of objective fact. There's no sense that this tests are made by human beings that decide what's important and what's not. And what's important is very, very narrow and is decontextualized. Both that the results aren't reported in terms of socioeconomic community, all the different factors, the resources in the school, all those things are absent from the reporting. So I would think that the reporting of assessment is a central issue in the media and how people come to understand public education.
Why would anybody be for the destruction of public education?
Well, good old greed gets in there. I think there's been a long-standing smear campaign in the media where you get people moving towards private education in the States. I think that has occurred. You keep cutting the funding to public ed, and then magically public ed declines, but it's taken out of any sort of context that the decline might have something to do with the fact the buildings are falling apart and there's no teachers in them.
It's hard for us to imagine as people committed to public education, but those who do seek to weaken the public schools, they must have their rationale. Could it be that they think that we have a need for some sort of laboring class that are not overly educated, who will do the hewing of wood and the carrying of water? I mean, what would be the argument for education being so non-inclusive?
I think it gets into what Deirdre was talking about in terms of assessment, how we decide what's worthy of assessment, and the whole focus on efficiency, and that's a larger part of our society. That we want to measure everything, that we want it to be definable and say we put this in and this came out. And when teachers don't, the system doesn't deliver that, then there's a tendency to say, by the Fraser Institute, we need to go to a private system that will be more efficient, will give us those measurables. It was Elliot Eisner who once said, the things that are measurable are the things that aren't so important. But that becomes the obsession.
Not a Thorndikean, Elliot.